this one?
Steve. Yeah, I worked on my email at home, no problem, worked here, just a little bit of real problem, and this is locked within what the Steve on that one.
As a sports.
Turn it off.
Test, test, test.
Report that. I think there's something going on when it flips from the access point near you to this one, because his laptop a lot of times freaks out too.
Are we all set now? Oh, good, all right. And we're live? Are we broadcasting? No, we're just recording. Okay, very good. All right, well, good afternoon. It's about 2:35 on Tuesday, October 5th, and we're gathered at the State Capitol on the 12th floor for in the public hearing room at the Public Service Commission for a work session on the advance notice of proposed rulemaking for FERC on transmission planning and cost allocation. I am Julie Fedorchak. With me are Commissioner Randy Christman and Brian Crosius. We also have staff. I'm going to let the staff introduce themselves around the room, and then we'll just jump into the work session. Victor, you want to start?
Victor Shook with staff.
Adam Renfin with staff.
John Hsu.
Marcus Stedloff.
Okay, and we've got Steve, Pamela, and Jason also in the room. All right, so Jack, you kind of, I think, established this work session, so I'll probably just kick it over to you. I've looked at this stuff. You guys all, first of all, thank you all for putting some thoughts together on this to get us started. I do think it's really important to weigh in as a state, because I think FERC needs to hear from states on this, and we need to be thoughtful in our comments and it's a great opportunity for us to kind of advance where we're at on this issue, transmission planning, cost allocation, as well as some of the broader issues of the entire reform that's occurring in the and the utility industry. So I think it's a good opportunity, and look forward to hearing what my colleagues have to say and having a discussion about these issues. Did you want to make any opening comments, either of you?
Just before we start, so this isn't lingering in my mind, when are these due again?
I believe it's October 12th or 13th. I was planning on submitting on the 12th.
Week from
today's what, the 5th? So the fifth, a week?
Yeah.
Okay.
A week from today.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so it is important to note that the ANOPR is 137 pages long with a infinite number of questions in it, so there's a lot of different ways that we could go, and I'm sure you've all read it probably more than once at least and can, you know, quote from it extensively. So with that, we'll kick it over to you all, the experts, Jack, led
sure.
by Jack.
Seems like this is about all anybody's talking about at the coffee shops.
For sure. If I have to talk about it one more time with my teenagers, I'm going to be so sick of it.
So they did issue the ANOPR, and so the initial comments are due, like I said, on the 12th or 13th. We plan on submitting on the 12th. There is an opportunity after that for reply comments, though, as well, and that will be, I think, another number of days, maybe 40, 45 days after the initial comments are filed to provide some additional information as well.
And what would we be replying to at that point? Other people's comments?
Yep. we could reply to the on the number of issues that are probably going to be discussed by all the different groups and agencies around the country.
Okay.
After that, if we would like to follow up as well.
And then, just as far as you understand this process, isn't ANOPR something they do frequently? Because I haven't heard about these before. Maybe one hasn't risen to this level of interest in the past.
Sure. It's not a whole lot different than the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, only except for the origin. That one came from the Department of Energy. Advanced Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, I think this is really where they're gathering a lot of information. It's kind of like having a stakeholder meeting that we do prior to our rulemaking to gather information to see what needs to be done for their actual proposed rules prior to them drafting them.
I see.
That's as far as my understanding of them are.
Okay.
The NOPR does touch on a lot of different topics and a lot of different questions in a few different areas, but they did specify a few broad areas, regional transmission planning, regional cost allocation, generation interconnection funding, generator interconnection queuing process, and consumer protections as the broad categories to provide comments on. I did draft up something, and this is very preliminary. I was just hoping to have something in front of you guys to get you guys thinking about different areas. I didn't go into the details because until we have the opportunity, I'll sit down and discuss it. I could have really run down a rabbit hole with different specific items, especially after speaking with the three RTO analysts and their involvement with SPP and MISO. But I did put some together. Generally, touches on as concepts that we are currently working with the RTOs, that we feel that those processes are working, and that a preference to stay away from usurping state authority towards a more federal level. And we caution against any federal expansion. We touch on reliability and the importance of that, the cost causation principle, and to ensure that any future changes ensure that the cost causation principle is followed and that an open and transparent policies are preferred as we go forward, especially. So we know we look through rate cases, and there's a lot of granularity to a degree with them, but when we get to the regional transmission planning level and the cost allocation, that gets lost on us to a degree. And even I know with speaking with Victor and Adam and Marcus, they all specified that we lose the granularity level of review that we have over those type of costs and where the money is going. I did create a separate sheet, and I emailed it all to you, and this was essentially a conglomeration of all the different items that the RTO analysts brought forward. Victor, Adam, and again, Marcus, they provided some concepts to put forward for the three of you to look at, see if there's any of these issues we want to go into more detail into, whether it's preferring that that expansion or transmission bill shouldn't be assumed for generation prior to it actually being needed, or any other topic. So I didn't intend to actually go through each of these individually, and so when it passed out ahead of time, I was hoping if any of you, there was a specific issue in here that you felt that we needed to discuss, we could then elaborate on those a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. I think just for starters, unless do you guys have a direction you'd like to go, Brian and Randy, I have a big overarching question that I think would help us know which direction kind of in general we want to take our comments, but I don't want to usurp the conversation if you guys have things you want to get after.
Let's start with your question, and then I'd like to just get a little more history in terms of how you've approached the RTOs respectively with your involvement. And as I went through, I thought the key points were cost allocation, cause and effect, in other words, state policy, different state policies that are out there, and then North Dakota ratepayers, and you didn't word it this way, but get brought along for the ride from a cost standpoint, whether they like it or don't like it. I thought that was a real key point, an important point, but I need a little more background just because I think PSCs, PUCs across the country are going to be weighing in. And I think our voice in this is going to be, we're going to be in the minority if we're talking about preserving baseload facilities and recognizing them for their attributes. And if you read Basin's comments, I didn't say that they're against coal, just to be candid about it, but they did say that they can keep adding renewable, back it up with gas, it'll be fine. Now, they did make the comment that transmission cost allocation should be appropriately assigned. Again, that cause and effect, who wants the renewable energy? They should pay for the additional transmission. But just strategically, I was kind of going through all of this, and I think depending on your question, which would help define the overarching direction, I think we just have to be realistic that we're not going to be with, I think we're going to approach this just a little bit differently. Everyone's going to talk about reliability, but I think there's a lot of disagreement in how you get there. So what is your question?
Did you have that?
Well, I have maybe an overarching question too. And then I have some details, but I guess my overall thing is I don't know what is best, how detailed to get. This is very high level.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many comments FERC will get on something like this. A lot. And some will be long and detailed. I suppose some will be very high level. I don't know what's the most useful. Mm-hmm. And so if we think that, you know, pretty general and high level is best, then this is probably pretty good. There are a few of these kind of, I don't know, we call them talking points or whatever, that I think are very important and maybe could be added here if we want to add a little bit of more detail. And that's where I'm kind of at. And then I do see one thing in here that might conflict with itself.
But. Sure.
So the big picture for me is to get it started is what level of detail is best to be most effective in this? And I don't know if that was just how your question started.
Basin is asking if our session is going to be broadcast.
Be recorded, though.
I'm just going to ignore them for now. Okay, so I think we can, I have thoughts on that level of detail, but my bigger question is more to the point of the tone, or I agree with a lot of the issues brought up here in terms of, you know, the queue reform, generation pay, generator pay concepts we should be focusing on, you know, cost allocation that is, you know, beneficiaries pay, you know, those concepts, and then having room in the whatever tariffs are decided for state policy drivers, states that have aggressive policies to pay the brunt of their policies. But aside from all of those things, the question that I think faces us in North Dakota is one of, we are an energy exporting state, electricity exporting state. And currently, our lines are pretty full. And that means they're full for all power, not just wind. That means they're full for our coal plants. They're full for our, you know, any gas plants that come on. Everybody suffers from that. So it's kind of the initial reaction that I have on transmission build out is we're not driving it. Our state doesn't have these goals. And so we shouldn't be paying for this overlay. And I say that pretty regularly in OMS meetings and to myself. But that said, in the back of my mind, I'm also conscious of the fact that without additional transmission build, our industries here are going to be hampered. So where and our governor, our lieutenant governor, our John Weida, these people are advocating for more transmission. So other state leaders in North Dakota are supporting this. So I think my big broad question is, where do we want to be as a commission in terms of, are we for transmission build? Are we against transmission build? Or are we for transmission build with careful attention to the how the cost allocation happens and making sure that our ratepayers don't pay the brunt of it? Because I think that we need to be careful of the language you use to make clear where we're at in terms of the overall goal of building more transmission. So, and that's a question that the three of us really have never talked about.
That's right.
So that's,
and I don't think Bri agree about either.
Well, I don't know. That's why I want to hear your thoughts and see where we're all at and, you know, what insights you have that I haven't thought about, et cetera.
Well, so I'll just kick it off and probably be offensive. We'll see.
Are you offended at my question?
No.
Okay.
No. But I've been in industry meetings for the last few years where I felt like I was the absolutely lone voice in the room pushing back against this wonderful catchphrase or buzzwords that it seems like every political person likes to use. Well, I'm all of the above. Well, the fact of the matter is all of the above was working well as long as we had the old transmission system that was built out years ago and there was all that extra capacity on it. And we could add a lot of wind, but now it's been mostly saturated. Mm-hmm. And from here on, as we add more renewables that are heavily subsidized at all the times when they're working, they have such a competitive advantage that it is working against the baseload generators. And the more of it if we added another transmission line, we would quickly saturate it with wind. And there would be just that much more wind to be operational on windy days and leave the baseload generators with even less opportunity to sell power on those days. And so I guess I'm not such a fan of that. Now, if a generator wants to come in and build their transmission and pay for it, I guess I'm fine with that. That's part of
capitalism. But we can't is outside of this.
I'm fine with that, but I am not such a fan of this, let's just build more transmission and all of the above pay for it, because it's not working to the benefit of what I think is an important part of our future, and that's maintaining baseload generation.
Can you clarify? I think I have half my answer, or half the answer in the question in terms of what it's been like when you've been at SPP or RT, or MISO in your case. When you said the lone voice in the room, are you, not to assume, but is that when you're talking to the folks, other participants at SPP?
No, I was actually referring to a lot of North Dakota energy meetings and stuff like that where, you know, it seems like most people want to say, well, I'm all of the above. No one wants a conflict in politics, right? And I have said on multiple occasions at these meetings exactly what I just said. That worked when we had excess capacity on the transmission system.
Well, we can get to the SPP and MISO whenever you two want, if you want to weave it in as you're talking. To me, that'll influence when we decide on a direction. If we can come to a consensus, then if that's a similar experience when you're at SPP, or if people are just more knowledgeable and better at their rebuttal, or more skilled in.
There's kind of mixed feelings there. There are some Windrich areas that are maybe ahead of, if you put North Dakota, just if you generalize it as the whole state being a Windrich area. There are smaller zones in SPP that are considered Windrich areas that have already been very adversely impacted. But I would say out of SPP as a whole, they're sort of a minority, but they have been screaming for years already about the heavy impact and just the general allocation concept of SPP is the highway byway system, whereby the over 300 kilowatt lines are paid for by the whole region, and 100 to 300 are split between a zone and the whole region. It's a split deal. But those 100 to 300 kilowatt lines that traverse those smaller Windrich zones, we're just crushing them. And that's been a big gripe of theirs for a long time, and I see it coming to us. If SPP decides to resolve any constraint issues up around in our zone, we're going to end up paying for a bunch of it if it's less than 300 kilowatt transmission lines. Even though, as one of these points in here that I highlighted that I really liked made, we have plenty of generation for our needs up here. We're not the ones demanding it.
So I don't think that we're super far off, because what I am, maybe I'm taking this a step further than what you mean, but if you're saying, and I'll get to your question in a second too, Brian, on the MISO piece, but if you're saying to the bigger question of whether we're for or against transmission build-out, if you're saying you're against it, or you're saying I'm against it unless the people who are driving it are paying for it?
Well, yes, I think it definitely should be the people who are driving it paying for it. However, at the end of the day, if we're going to lose a lot of this baseload generation, then there's no other alternative to keep the lights on but to keep building more generation. And, of course, we'll be the ones delivering the bad news to our citizens that we have to raise their rates to do it. But, so it's hard to say completely, well, I'm just against it, because it might be our only alternative.
Right.
But I hope that if we could somehow prevail upon FERC, and then if they don't require the RTOs to do certain things, whether it's FERC making decisions or the RTOs, if we can move the ball in the direction of the generators or the ones demanding all the new generation pay for the additional transmission, if that stays the case, yes, then I'm just not a fan of adding more unnecessary generation. There are times, though, when small things do need to be done. The Bakken is a prime example. There you actually had some load growth, and so some transmission did need to be built. So I don't ever want that line out there that I was against adding more transmission. When some is needed to serve load, then it ought to be built and allocated appropriately.
Well, and I think that's the million-dollar question, is what's needed, what's needed now, because the system's so different. And it does put us in a precarious spot, because if we're dragging our feet on transmission and it takes a long time to build it out, and you don't have that infrastructure then to transfer the power the way it's going to be transferred in the future, and this new, you know, with these new generators, then it's not going to be good for our customers either. So it's, I guess, I mean, the no regrets approach that I feel and have advocated for in MISO, Brian, is more of a recognizing that all states have different policy goals, and just because you're a state that's being, that has a company with a with some very aggressive policy goals, because we're hurt by the fact that Xcel has one of the most aggressive policies out there. And so that becomes part of our problem. It's your state is helping drive that. No, it isn't. We've never approved that, but they're still driving that policy. But saying like there has to be a pathway for the people with the high goals to pay their fair share, and then being generally open to the need for transmission when you see the big constraints. I mean, that's kind of where we've been. I mean, I also don't love the idea of being out there saying, yeah, we don't want it, we don't want to, you know, sell our ratepayers with it, and then there's a decent amount of North Dakotans who want more renewable development in our state, and they don't want me or us taking away their opportunities for developing their wind resources because we're advocating against transmission to connect it. And so, you know, there's a lot of competing interests in all of this.
There really are, and I guess, well, I'll play off of that, but I want to ask a question too. So part of that is, yes, we have a lot of people who want more development for economic development reasons. Either they host a wind farm, one or more turbines, they live in an area that's going to get some direct economic development benefits from it, they work in that industry, that sort of thing. I don't know that a lot of those same folks are really aware of the constraints that we have with transmission and the fact that those chickens come home to roost and it causes their electric rates to then increase. And if you have enough of a direct benefit, then maybe you don't care about that because, I mean, you really, really benefit from this project. But for a lot of others, I think it's one of the issues is when so many people continue to articulate, well, we're all of the above. We have, as a political class in North Dakota, we have taught our citizens that we can continue to just add generation. And we've kind of, we could for a while, and we sort of fooled them into thinking that we still can.
Well, depending on where the transmission is built and how, I think you can. Like, you could run DC lines to PJM, and that would allow for wind development in North Dakota for a long, long time and not affect our reliability. It just depends on how it's done.
Well, I meant without adding more transmission and costs.
Yeah, I see.
Just for the record, but you already know this, I've never used the phrase all of the above other than criticizing it when I talk to the LEC.
But did I, at least from the SPP side of things, answer what you're exactly... I didn't know exactly what you were asking, well, and I didn't mean to...
No, you did.
...skim by.
You both did. The disconnect I have, just to be candid, though, is this keeps moving forward at Mach speed. So... Yeah, I just think...
This being what? Transmission or the grid transformation?
Generating assets as they're added. Renewable. I mean, that's moving at speed ahead. And it's, you know, not to get into the details, but just from a wording standpoint, you know, we talk about new gen isn't needed.
You mean Brandy and I haven't been able to stop this? Is that what you're getting at? Despite our comments at MISO and OMS, our OMS and our RSC, it still keeps moving ahead.
Those are
dang
your,
President Biden for those his 2035.
Those are your words. Okay. But one thing we can't, as we're thinking about the comments, you know, we have to balance out, and we have to figure out how to get this across. You know, we can talk all day long about this generation isn't needed, but it's not about what's needed. It's about what's wanted in terms of the type of electrons that are being delivered to specific areas, or especially to metro areas in the east, et cetera, everywhere. North Dakota looks at it a little differently because we have a vested interest in coal plants, the coal facilities. So just, I just wanted to have kind of a feel for, you know, are your comments being recognized by enough, or is it a larger group where they fall on deaf ears because the minute you say coal to a lot of groups, they shut down. You can talk about carbon capture. They shut down. Well, it's still coal. And
I can answer your question more directly now. My opinion is, and Victor can flail arms or just speak up if he disagrees with this, it was a bit of a split, as I had mentioned before, but since mid-February, there is a whole lot more discussion about the concerns over long-term reliability and the long-term costs of continuing the direction we were going. That was a big alert to a lot of the members, and I think a fair amount of the senior staff that we deal with down there, that the direction we've been moving is not going to work long-term, and a lot has changed. I did want to just point out, because we kind of got on this, among a few that I had highlighted of these points that I thought could potentially be better emphasized more in these comments was actually the second one regarding the energy-only interconnection options.
I like that.
And this is something that we just can't drive home often enough, in my opinion, because it has to do with, well, the people want this, or that kind of thing. But few understand that once the interconnections, and I'm reading from here, once the interconnections in place, we see reliability or economic projects show up later due to the minimal transmission investment for these energy-only interconnections. And that is a big problem in this, that they come in, I mean, go to the coffee shop. You're not going to find anyone that understands energy-only interconnection agreements as opposed to the options. But if they're in an area that benefits from it, or have friends or relatives, or directly benefit from it, yes, they want it. Yes, they want it, but not what comes with it. And if we ever needed evidence of that, look at the reaction to the cost of gas increases that we had over the course of the summer. Those cost of gas increases were driven by the fact that we have, over the last couple decades, become way more reliant on renewables, and when they don't produce, on the same gas system that was built out to heat homes. And thus we have this competition between electric generators and homes. And so now a lot of the ones that maybe wanted the renewable generators built up are not very happy about the direct result of the cost of gas increase.
So on the MISO front, this kind of builds off of that. So Adam and I, this was pre-Marcus, spent a good number of months kind of pushing this whole generator pays concept, because MISO was actively working on a new batch of projects. And then at the same time, a cost allocation methodology for those. We've tried to, because Darcy and IGAM has been big on this generator pays concept, and trying to, we kept kind of trying to work our way through with South Dakota and some of our other like-minded states, this concept of generator pays. Like, so, and I kept saying to people, including the green, like the renewable folks who call me separately and say, what are you after? I kept saying, I think that the generator pays concept helps provide a more true cost signal, because then you guys have to bake it into your price if you're having to pay for these upgrades. Whereas if those are socialized by everybody else, then you get to jump on basically for free, and it's a, your price is low. I mean, because you're not paying for all those costs. It's not a true indication of what the cost of your energy is. Well, okay, yeah, but geez, it's really hard. Boy, it's so dang hard. And then you've got, like, who owns the line? Does the generator own the line? Who owns the line? And what if other generators hook up to the line? Then what do they have to pay? And it gets, like, seriously super complicated. So what this does, though, this energy-only business, I think, might be a compromise on the whole generator pay, because it would require their interconnection costs to be higher for the upgrades that are needed for not just the energy-only line, right? So that might be a really strong position to be pushing that gets closer to the generator pay, which without, you know, just doing the generator pay, like getting stalled by that. And then one more thing, Victor, before, where MISO's direction has gone, where we've gone instead of the generator pay issue is, or clear, distinct generator pay is, the customers who are taking the energy off, who you have to assume are the ones demanding that energy, it's based on a load ratio share. So they're using a bulk of that energy, they pay the highest amount. But currently the proposal isn't that they pay all of the amount. There's still an amount that goes to us. It's just on your load ratio share. And we have a very small load in compared to MISO's hall. So North Dakota's load ratio share is small. So that's where, you know, the conversation is now, where the customers who are using that energy are going to be paying more for it because they're pulling it off and they have a higher load, higher share of the load. So, but I still like this because it would allow us to include or push for a truer cost of the upgrades and the cost to the system of bringing on more non-dispatchable energy. So I think whatever we need to say to beef that up, I agree with Randy, we should incorporate that in. And it's not something I've heard talked about a lot on the MISO side. Adam, we got to start talking about that.
Go ahead.
I just have a couple comments. I have to leave in a few minutes to get the kids to skating. But so the first three bullets were mine in here. So that comment about the energy-only interconnection, I think both MISO and SPP have options like that, where you can be an energy-only interconnection versus a network interconnection.
Yeah.
And I think kind of forcing the network connection to be the only allowable option would be helpful. I don't think it would solve the entire problem,
right,
in my opinion, at least. But it's one step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my further point is really kind of all of my comments are around cost allocation, I think, is going to be the important piece. I mean, the new proposals from MISO and, you know, SPP has discussed similar kinds of things to the MVPs with different names. But the important piece of that is always going to be cost allocation. I mean, whether our voice is heard or not, that we do or don't want new transmission in the state, to some level we need new transmission. And the good part about those MVP type of projects is it does more cost effectively combine different required projects.
Yeah.
You know, so we got the reliability projects, we have the economic projects, and then we have the generator interconnections that are being thrown in there now. And figuring out the right cost allocation methodology is, it's going to be challenging. Like we're already seeing, just trying to think about the current world. But it's a different world. You know, in the past, generation was built near load, or there was a direct line running from the generation to the load, and that's not the world we're in anymore with renewables. So I'm a bit agnostic to the type of generation, but I think it's important that the cost allocation is the most important piece to us.
Yeah, but where do we want to be on the cost allocation? I mean, what are we pushing for?
That's a good question. and that's part of the problem is, I don't have an answer for how to allocate the costs of those, but my only answer to the question is different than how we've done it in the past. And maybe it's a, you know, things just running through my mind as we were talking here is, you know, maybe you set a dollar amount for any generator to connect to the transmission system. It is X dollars per megawatt, or X thousands or millions, I suppose it should be, really.
Mm-hmm.
That is the cost of interconnection. And once you pay those costs, load covers the rest of the transmission system, and this is just kind of an adder. Or you could set it based on the number of megawatt hours you put into the grid. You know, there's other methods that you could utilize.
Darcy and Igam has some interesting methods. I can't repeat them because they're Darcy and Igam.
Yeah. I believe it. He's got some whoppers sometimes.
Yeah. But they're good.
I've got more of a comment, I guess, and question. As time goes on, and North Dakota and Texas right now are the ones only really having load growth that have a need for expanding transmission. Do you see this process slowing down as the ITCs and PTCs fade out, or where there's no longer ITC, PC, PTC anyways? And then is there no longer a want or a push, I guess, for transmission build-out if those tax credits go away completely then? I know they've been expanded multiple times, or they keep on getting extended, I should say, not expanded. But once they do phase out completely, is there still going to be this push for renewables? And without those tax credits, are they going to get the loans from the banks that they need to be able to build those?
I don't think they're... I know they're set to sunset again for literally the 15th, 18th time. I mean, the PTCs have been... I think they originated in the 90s.
Okay.
And, or was it before that? At least the 90s, might have been before, but I think it was mid-90s, might have been 91 or something. Just to show you that, yeah, on paper, you know, today it looks like they're going to phase out in a few years, but, and then I think they'll be extended, and the control of power in Washington shifts before that shift occurs, or if they believe that shift's going to happen, I think they'll get loaded up at the end of this current two-year period before that Congress exits the scene, and they're really easy just to pull into the budget bill or whatever else. So I don't even count on that happening. It's a good question. I thought they'd been gone 10 years ago. But
it is a good question, but I agree with Brian that they're not going away. We've had Congresses that were politically complete opposite, and they extend them too. It's a popular it's like the all of the above line. It's a popular thing to do. And there's... you were right when you said expanded, because they've been both extended and expanded, and they're not going anywhere.
But following up on that and this, into what Marcus was saying and bringing back into, I guess, this NOPR, is your concern to the extent that we set policies for expanding transmission under the assumption that production tax credits are going to continue to expand renewable energy resources and subsequently possibly disappear, leaving stranded costs? Or is it just a, more of a generic question?
I guess it's more of a question that you kind of see as time goes out, the LGIAs fill up to still fit within that tax credit period, which I think wind is 2023, I think is when that expires, and I think the ITC, I believe, is 2026 right now.
I think it's 25 based on our last hearing.
Okay.
For the wind.
I don't even look at them anymore. I don't even have any idea when they expire because I don't believe they're going to expire.
I think that I do not think that'll change the development of the renewables and all of these new technologies that are changing the grid. I think that'll keep happening.
I guess the only comment I guess I was trying to make is that you do see that within those GIAs, though, that or the queue interconnection queues anyways, that those renewables do drop off considerably once ITC and PTC expire anyways, that they try and get them in within that time period so they can have the max benefit within those credits.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. The one thing that in the FERC NOPR that I think is interesting and telling in terms of where they're going with this is the fourth bullet, big bucket, whether participant funding of interconnection-related network upgrades may be proven to be unjust and unreasonable, and whether the commission should eliminate the independent entity variations that allow the RTOs to use participant funding for interconnection-related network upgrades. So I think SPP, you have to pay 100%. They have to pay 100% of those upgrades. MISO, they pay 90% of the upgrades. FERC is entertaining, well, maybe they shouldn't have to pay any of the upgrades. And I think that just shows you where this is going with the FERC and the policy folks that are out there. They want less costs shouldered by the interconnection entity, not more. And interestingly, just today I got a study from Clean Grid Alliance that talked about all the benefits. That it's a comprehensive study of several RTOs that talks about, shows the benefits that are being received by a big broad group of people and ratepayers from those network upgrades that nobody's paying for, that the generators are shouldering. So that feeds right into this. That's what they're going to tell FERC, that we're paying for all this stuff and everybody's benefiting it. So it isn't just unreasonable. So anyway, doesn't mean that we don't say what we're going to say, but I just think it's an interesting new twist that I am just now zeroing in on and hearing.
If I could just touch back briefly, Commissioner Crisman's question about how broad we should go. I think to a degree, most of these initial comments can be very broad, I mean, for most entities. However, to the extent that we can get into more detail with specific suggestions or suggestions of things for FERC to examine, and we can, of course, get narrow, and I think to the extent that other groups will be, they will as well. But traditionally, looking back at how we've viewed this and towards, I guess, we're looking at transmission built out in North Dakota, and this is how staff has traditionally viewed this. When you're looking at orderly development and rate regulation, the focus has generally been solely upon the detriment and benefit to the ratepayers and not the broader public. I mean, the public convenience and necessity has been for the purposes of building out generally for to ensure that people are getting service, but also that they're doing it in a manner that they're not double paying for additional resources that aren't absolutely necessary. So I guess to the extent that the commission would like to, I mean, move in a different direction, that would be good to know as well, because generally that's where staff points their comments and their work towards. So I guess to the extent that you guys have some thoughts on that would be helpful. to the extent that you didn't, there is disagreement on what's currently in here, that would be helpful on these very broad comments. And if there's anything in addition to the, aside from the one that Victor just was explaining and we were discussing, are there any of these other specific items that we'd like to possibly delve into a little bit deeper in these comments as well? That'd be very helpful to know.
Well, I've got mine listed if you want me to
start. Why don't you go through them?
Okay, for a potential conflict on the second page of this draft comment, the second paragraph, the first sentence says that we agree that the existing planning and cost allocation may be adequate to ensure just and reasonable, may be inadequate mm-hmm. to ensure just and reasonable rates. Then skip a sentence and we go to the third sentence and it says, it's the opinion of the PSC that these existing structures for participation and policy decisions are working.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure if we can say that they're working and that they may be inadequate.
Or working to address these inadequacies, I guess, is probably where that would be oriented towards. So I could clarify so something.
Maybe working to address any. Okay, yeah. And then I'll tell you, the things that I see as good bullet points, if we wanted to go into a little more detail, I'd mention the one, that second one on those energy-only interconnection agreements and what they inevitably seem to end up doing. And then the fifth one, that new generation that causes need for the new transmission should be accountable for the costs. I really like the way that's put. Actually, these are right in a row. And then the sixth and the seventh, that new generation within zones that have a sufficient planning reserve margin might be parasitic to the existing generation and can create stranded costs. I think that's a really important one because we're seeing it. And that the next one, with us being a state that exports half of our energy, we don't need new transmission here and not be paying for it. And then sure. The one other thing that I thought was a potentially good point to maybe drive home to them that's not in here is that, you know, this sort of this presumption that we need all this new generation and transmission because we've got all these electronics and everything is moving forward into the digital age and we need all this more power. But the fact of the matter is, efficiency is moving at the same rate. And the increased energy usage has been going up nationally, has been going up very slowly. And so really what we're talking about with all this additional transmission and generation isn't about needing anything. It's all about wants. It's about state mandates or a company's trying to impress Wall Street or something. We're not really doing much transmission and generation, just for unique areas that have some kind of big growth like the Bakken did a decade ago. But outside of that, we don't need any of this. Well, we need very little of this.
Sure. So to a degree of just trying to conceptualize this in the context of the INOPR, when they're really discussing doing a lot of build out or possibly planning build out for future development of renewables in areas or in different areas, to the extent that they're making plans to create those additional costs at the same time that we don't know the energy efficiencies that may be put forth in the future, I guess that may end up not serving our customers or
recent years has shown that efficiency improvements are going about as fast as energy needs are growing, and you have to question how much more we need to add.
Well, not really when you look at the retirements. I mean, that's what this build-out is for, is to replace all the stuff that's being shut down and proposed to be shut down. And because they recognize that if you're gonna replace a coal-fired facility with wind, you need probably, I don't even know how many, 50 times more wind. And even then, it's probably not gonna work. And then the transmission to build, but that's what's driving this, just replacement.
Although I guess I question, you know, which is the cause and which is the effect there. So yes, we have all these planned retirements, but they're planning to retire because on days like today when it's windy and not extraordinarily hot or cold, they don't sell any power because they're facing this subsidized competition. And so the more we add to it, the more we add to the retirements. But if we quit adding the new generation that is subsidized and then socializing the cost of the transmission that's necessary for it, we wouldn't be having all these retirements.
But how do you get to the carbon goals then?
Well,
that's what's driving it. I mean, that's it.
Well, then whoever has the high carbon goals are the ones that need to be paying for this.
That's, I think, where we have to land. Yeah. I think that's where we're all kind of on the same page. It's like whoever's driving these goals and the desires for the new needs to be paying for it and paying for the system to enable it.
And that was one thing that, I mean, a lot of these general topics that I wrote here, which that was one was oriented towards that. That was the one that the three analysts all globally, you know, definitely agreed with. I was trying to write it, the stuff that they definitely all hit on the same general topics to a degree.
No, the flip side to that is FERC will probably view that as, oh, well, so any grants or anything like that you guys want out there for your carbon capture projects? Well, you just pay for them yourselves then.
Well, I mean, I think that we should, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because we should use this opportunity to highlight North Dakota's approach to this, that we have our own state approach to addressing carbon reductions, and it's through carbon capture, storage, and utilization, and slip in the governor's goal.
Certainly the CCUS part of it.
I mean, I think you get a audience that listens more closely to us if you say that we're doing this. We just have a different approach. That'll get us there quicker, actually.
And just to reiterate Randy's point there a little bit ago, too, seeing the models from Excel showing the PSCC model, which is a transmission constraint model. The only constraints they're really showing within North Dakota was right on the border between North Dakota and Minnesota, or a need for transmission.
Down by Big Stone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Regarding the net zero, then, is that something that the three of you agree would be put on there? Okay. Is there any disagreement on what's in here existing? Currently, it's fairly broad, but I mean, overarching.
In the
comments.
I think if you fix that one thing.
Sure, so, just to clarify that.
Yeah.
Sure.
I have a couple. In terms of wording, there are a couple of examples may be inadequate, maybe parasitic. Couldn't we say accurately that it has, instead of maybe, proven to be inadequate and proven to be parasitic? It's happening. I think maybe is wishy-washy.
Yeah.
And if we're going to come in with, here's our approach, I think we need to be direct and decisive. And also on the MVP wording, when I read that report, the MVP project report, when it was, the paper was first put out, it was its primary purpose, it was to take care of some congestion, but the lead in that report was, and just to word that a little differently, if my colleagues are in agreement, was to create an on-ramp for new generation.
Mm-hmm.
I I mean, that was it. That was the bulk of it. And then they're going to fix congestion issues behind it. But, I mean, let's call it what it is.
I mean, there was letters from all the governors asking for it, and myself asking for that MVP to support new renewable generation.
Where's the MVP part in
here? It's not in there. Oh. It's just in here.
I think
if we add that in.
Yeah, it's in the bullet points.
The new addition that you pointed out, it kind of bleeds up into the previous bullet point.
Yeah. And what was the first one? That they are parasitic.
I think I would word it instead of maybe inadequate or maybe have proven to be inadequate.
Yeah, I really like your point there.
Or have proven to be parasitic.
Yeah, and staff, you'd pointed that out as well. Again, this will be a complete rewrite by the end. Just trying to get pen on the paper. So
we'll
definitely write it much more in the affirmative all the way through.
But okay.
Points well taken, Commissioner.
One thing I mentioned to Jack before the meeting, and just to throw it out with you guys, I'd kind of like to see us break the comments in kind of by subject, just to help them zero in on what our key points are versus just like, you know, more, less like a brief and more like an outline of, you know, like have a section on generator pays, state policy drivers, or, you know, cost allocation, beneficiary pays, or those, just break it down into kind of key subjects. And within that, then have our main points.
Well, I'm going to, you're a very good writer at artful and quality writing to persuade people. Jack's an outstanding writer on legal things. I don't know where FERC is on this. Jack, if you disagree with that, I don't think we're so sensitive that we're going to say that we want to word it however they will read it best, as I'm sure they're all lawyers probably, and I don't know the best way to do it. I don't have an opinion.
Once I had all of your thoughts together, I presumed we'd be breaking it down. I was trying to already break down the paragraphs to degree topically so that we could, in the future, break it down and organize it a little differently, too. There were the other three, Commissioner Christian, you brought up, the number 5, 7, and 8. Is there agreement on those two for those comments to add them in?
Maybe not exactly how they're written, but concepts in.
Topically.
Yeah. Except those on 5, 6, and 7.
I'm sorry, 5, 6, and 7.
I just want to comment quickly on what Brian was saying, too, about parasitic load. That wouldn't just be an effect towards coal units either or just gas units. They can be parasitic to wind as well. Once you have a certain amount of peaking units within an area, there's no more peak to take off of, and that's typically what the renewables do is act as taking the peaks off of things. So once an existing amount of wind is already in that area or solar, there's only so much that it can take so that it'll start being parasitic to other wind that's already there or other renewables, and not just coal or gas.
I just have another thing. Is it worth pointing out, because I know Oklahoma experienced this huge, but I suppose almost all of us in this central corridor of the nation did, what's already happening here with cost of gas, or is that getting too far removed from the actual transmission? But the fact of the matter is, this cost of gas thing is directly attributed to our policies over the years of relying more on non-dispatchable generation, and our consumers are paying the price.
Well, and that's in here. There is a line about the something about
Winter Storm Uri.
Yeah, but I actually thought in that area we said, you know, even though the impacts weren't that big in North Dakota, I actually think we should not say that because we do have big impacts in North Dakota, especially considering that we generate two or three times more power than what we actually need. So the fact that our customers were hit. So I'd like to, you know, emphasize and say that our customers were hit hard by that.
Sure.
Yeah, that'd be fine with me.
not as hard as Texas, but I mean, that's still, that's like the extreme comparison. We ought not be letting that be the barometer.
Well, the pricing for gas hubs right now, the forecast modeling wasn't showing anything above, I don't know, around 350, mm-hmm. I think. And now we're seeing, it just looked Henry Hub's at 554 right now. No modeling was supporting those numbers a year or 2 years ago. So to see that right now is, yeah. is outstanding.
We had no idea who the president would be.
I can.
This is recorded, isn't it?
So many times.
It's absolutely stunning, some of the energy policy decisions that are being made. But shifts in political power can upset what you would even, at the time, who when you looked at the modeling, made sense. But several policy decisions later and not just in the U.S. This is a global phenomena. Europe is really driving the price of LNG, and there's a shortage.
Sure.
I had one other thing. And maybe I don't.
All right. Do we have enough to? Do you guys have enough to go by?
Sure. Yeah, I just want to make sure they're topically. There aren't any additional things as a group that I'd like to see in here.
This isn't really about, well, it is about the draft. It's not something that would be worded in the draft, just something to think about.
Sure.
And not, I think to some extent you always have to play the devil's advocate on what you send and what you're asking for and advocating for. And you're trying to punch holes in what you're doing. To find any weaknesses. So with that being said, I like the CCUS. I like that. Let's say that down the road, that DC line, for example, let's talk about Coal Creek. Say they're going to implement carbon capture, which they'll have to keep the coal units going. So that lands in Buffalo. Right now, 27 out of the 28 cooperatives that are members of GRE have voted yes on transferring the certificate for the transmission line, the DC line. One said no. So present day, looks fine. What if those, and not all of them are going to be receiving electrons. I think it's six. Or seven cooperatives down there. Let's say they don't want those electrons down the road, but St. Cloud or Rochester or another area, maybe southeastern Minnesota, were to say, we'll take them. We like the cost proposition. We like that. But now there's a transmission build-out to have to peel those off, move them down.
Not really, I don't think.
There might be. You don't know resources are added up the line.
Yeah.
And you just don't know. So anyway, not to get in the weeds on it, but would that be crippling to a Coal Creek if all of a sudden we're saying generator pays? Or are we still in decent shape? And I'm not saying I believe it.
Sure.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate to try and throw a scenario out, and hopefully it doesn't punch a hole in it. That would be my desire. But, sometimes it's be careful what you ask for, and just something to keep in mind as these comments are submitted, that we don't have buyer's remorse 5, 7, 10 years down the line going, oops, we did that.
I guess how I would see that working, though, would be like they would be selling it to MISO, and those people would have the new customers would have an agreement to purchase it, and they wouldn't need
just
a direct
conceptually
tie to their, they'd be buying it from the MISO market. right? So as long as you're in the MISO market, you can buy it from the MISO market. Yeah. And I think that's how that facility sees themselves in the future. They've got these initial customers, but they'll come and go, and they'll just be selling and marketing through that MISO, the MISO market, that power, whether it's...
Okay. Yeah.
I think that, but I appreciate the whole generator pay, you know, because, yeah, it will affect all generators. It wouldn't just be dispatchable or non-dispatchable, intermittent. It could affect all generators. Now, Darcy's got some concepts where it wouldn't affect the...
Darcy's not running MISO.
Maybe he should be the independent transmission operator that the Inoper was talking about.
Yes, let's hire Darcy for that. Independent transmission monitor.
Right, Darcy. Yeah.
Call monitor. Nice, smart guy.
I think this has been really helpful. Thank you, all three of you, for the input that you provided. And, of course, all the three of the analysts were extremely helpful as well, putting the information together so far. If the three of you are comfortable with it, I was just thinking that maybe Julie and I will probably work on putting the final draft together, and then we'll float it around if Brian and Randy are agreeable to that.
Sure.
For that.
Okay. Yep.
With your thoughts in mind.
Sounds good.
Put the legal writer and the artistic writer together, and we'll get something beautiful here.
Didn't know I was an artistic writer. To do a spin on the way out of the office.
Not too artistic.
Just to save all those Tribune articles.
Okay, so my takeaway in all of this is we are not in all. North Dakota has shifted its energy position. We are no longer an all of the above energy advocator, but we are all of the others in terms of who pays for this.
Okay. So,
yeah,
if you guys have enough to go on, then we'll, let's see, it's Tuesday, we have a week. Hopefully, maybe by the end of this week, we can have another draft out to everybody. You can spend your weekend poring over it and reading the ANOPR to make sure there's not anything else in there you want to address. I do think I just printed it.
Actually, if you do have the opportunity of reading some of the concurring positions of the commissioners individually, specifying their thoughts at the end, is pretty interesting to read through.
Yeah.
206 is only a couple pages, though, and that's what this covers, section 206. So if you open up the document, 206.
And what does 206 describe?
It's what this is, this printout of the...
Oh, yeah, I have that. Yeah. That's just the staff memo, right? Yeah. The staff presentation.
You know, and I think, I didn't say this earlier with Mike, I wanted to say, yeah, operating pools are trying to slow down, I think, a little bit some of the wind penetration, but every month there's a new record-breaking set for how much load is being served by wind. And even though they put a constraint on it, most of those wind...
Your thing isn't on...
Most of those wind contracts are must run. They're already under contract. You have multiple years out, so that's going to be dispatched regardless of it has to. So even with those constraints, I still think it winds up being parasitic to those zones.
All right. You good? All right. That is 3:45, and we are done. This workshop. Thanks, everyone.
Maybe I'll just still reemphasize, one of you made this point earlier, but thanks, everybody, for putting this together. I know Jack wrote the draft comments, but the feedback on all these talking points, that really helped me put this in perspective. So thank you to all of you.
Yeah. You guys obviously are understanding the RTO world. Look at that. We've got four people. Almost as big as Wisconsin.
I certainly buy all four of you plane tickets to Washington.